Sure am glad to see everybody out this evening. It's been a good day. I think I left it in the seat, didn't I? I left the Bible back here, too. I ain't excited about nothing. I would say Mike confuses me a little sometimes, but that'd be a lie, so I won't say that. I just messed up. But it is good to have you all here tonight. It's good to see everybody out. And hopefully we can study a little bit. I don't have anything profound to say, I don't expect, but maybe we can get something to remind us a little bit or put us in memory of something we once heard somebody say. And I was down in South Carolina a few weeks ago, had the opportunity to go with my wife and a friend of ours, and we were talking about things you think of when you're kids and different things like that. And she was talking about when we was going through the mountains, we was looking at the houses up there, and I always wondered how you get to them, you know, because you're down there and they're way up there and you wonder, man, there's got to be a road somewhere. I can't see it. And she said when she was little and they would drive by a mountain or a hill like that, she said she would see the lights up there and she would wonder how those lights got in the sky. She said it never occurred to her when she was small that there was a mountain there or a hill there. She just wondered how them lights got up there in the sky. And you know, as you get older, you see things, you become aware of things, and little questions like that kind of disappear out of your mind. But there's a lot of people that believe that way about, you know, the Bible, and they believe that way about God. Well, you know, if I can't see him, then he doesn't exist. Well, that's as ignorant as a little child thinking that a house is somehow hovering up in the sky and there's no mountain there. You know, just because they can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. And in the meantime, propping everything up because it is. And when we think about the things of God, and we think about when they talk about the creation, when they talk about different things, it just amazes me at the lengths people will go to not believe. And it's a whole lot easier just to believe. And it makes a whole lot more sense. But that's really not the point of the lesson tonight. The point of the lesson really, when she was telling me that, I thought of this story found in 2 Kings chapter 6. I'm sure y'all know about where I'm going with this. 2 Kings chapter 6, we'll begin with verse 8, and we'll read down here quite a ways, about down to verse 23 or so. 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 8. It says, "Then the king of Syria warred against Israel, and took counsel with his servants, saying, In such and such a place shall be my camp. And the man of God sent to the king of Israel, saying, Beware that thou pass not such a place, for thither the Syrians are come down. And the king of Israel said to the place which the man of God told him and warned him of, and saved himself there, not once nor twice. Therefore the heart of the king of Syria was sore troubled for this thing, and he called his servants and said unto them, Will ye not show me which of us is for the king of Israel? And one of his servants said, None, my lord, O king. But Elisha, the prophet that is in Israel, telleth the king of Israel the words that thou speakest in thy bedchamber. And he said, Go and spy out where he is, that I may send and fetch him. And it was told him, saying, Behold, he is in Dothan. Therefore sent he thither horses and chariots and a great host. They came by night and compassed the city about. And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, an host compassed the city, both with horses and chariots. And his servant said unto him, Alas, my master, how shall we do? Can't you just see him out there first thing in the morning, getting up, a little dew on the lilies here and there, and going to get maybe some water or something, going out there and looking down and seeing that mess out there in the valley? What are we going to do? And he answered, Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them. And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. And when they came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, "Smite this people, I pray thee, with blindness." And he smote them with blindness, according to the word of Elisha. And Elijah said to them, "This is not the way, neither is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom ye seek." But he led them to Samaria. And it came to pass, when they were come into Samaria, that Elijah said, "Lord, open the eyes of these men, that they may see." And the Lord opened their eyes, and they saw, and behold, they were in the midst of Samaria. And the king of Israel said unto Elisha, when he saw them, "My father, shall I smite them? Shall I smite them?" Sound like a little kid jumping up and down. "Shall I kill them? Can I kill them?" He answered, "Thou shalt not smite them. Wouldst thou smite those whom thou hast taken captive with thy sword and with thy bow? Set bread and water before them, that they may eat and drink, and go to their master." And he prepared great provision for them. When they had eaten and drunk, they sent them away, and they went to their master. So the bands of Syria came no more into the land of Israel. That's, to me, that is just an awesome story. Because I don't know why the king of Syria thought if he couldn't pull an army up on the regular army, how in the world he was going to pull an army up on the man that was telling him where his army was at. But he did, and he sent his men, and Elisha has the Lord ask the Lord, "Please open the eyes of my servant." And he just sees the mountain just covered with horses of fire, chariots of fire, angels everywhere. And he said, "Lord, smite him with blindness." And you know what? When I was a kid, I thought that meant he smote them that he's blind. I don't know that it means that. I think it may mean that they just couldn't see that they were where they were supposed to be. Because it says when they took him, they led them to Samaria, and then he opened their eyes to where they could see where they were. You know, sometimes you can see things without really seeing them. And I think that's what happened here. But be that as it may, whichever way, it was amazing when I read this story to think about what goes on around about us that we can't even see. You know, it would probably just... Well, I'm afraid it'd scare us to death, really, if we knew what was actually going on around about us. Because of the spiritual warfare and the battle that go on every day. You know, and we're going about our lives, we're just totally unconcerned with it about 90% of the time. We just don't really care and just going about our business. And meanwhile, you know, it's hard telling what's happening. Maybe we ought to, and I've heard people talk about, "Lord, maybe, you know, I wish you'd open our eyes that we could see." But the more I think about it, I don't necessarily need to know everything that's going on. You know, we look at things in the Bible and we think, well, that ought to be clear. The Lord ought to wrote more about that. He ought to made that so anybody could understand it. And, you know, sometimes it's just us that we just can't see what's right in front of us. But sometimes it is a little obscure, but we don't need to know everything. I don't have to know it all. What I maybe probably ought to be praying is, "Lord, increase my faith so that I don't feel a need to know. Lord, increase my faith." That's what the disciples told Jesus in Luke 17:5. The apostle said to him, "Lord, increase our faith." And wouldn't that be cool if God could just say, "Have more faith. Whoosh, there you go." Now, how often does something like that happen with God? Not that often. They said, "Lord, increase our faith." And what did Jesus do? Jesus began to teach them. And that's how we're going to increase our faith. We're going to increase our faith. It's going to be through understanding and learning. It's not going to be because something magically comes over us one day and we've got more faith. That's not how it happens. It comes through the teaching and the learning of the Word. The Lord said, they said, "Lord, increase our faith." And this is what He said. "If ye had faith..." He's going to tell them about faith now. I don't think He's browbeating them. Used to think He was, but I don't think He is. He said, "If ye had faith as a grain of mustard seed, ye might say to this sycamine tree, 'Be thou plucked up by the root, and be thou planted in the sea, and it should obey you. So the first thing the answer tells us is that to hear and gain knowledge about faith and about God and God's power is a way to increase our faith. That's a way to increase our faith. We need to accomplish great things. It's done through the power of God. If we had faith as a grain of mustard seed, my mom used to have a mustard seed in a locket. It was just a little bit, a tiny thing. You know, just they're just specks. And yet they'll grow to the size of a small tree, really. And she told me, I know she was kidding me, she told me one time she'd had that locket for 20 or 30 years at a time. And she said, I think it's growed a little in there. Faith is a grain of mustard seed. Now, you want to ask yourself, does that mean that the mustard seed had so much faith that it can grow into a great tree? Or does that mean if we had just a little speck of faith, we could do great things? I think it means the latter. Because mustard seed's a little bitty thing, but it grows into a great tree. If we had the faith, what could we do? But I put to you that it is God that moves sycamore trees. It's not us. It's God that moves mountains. It's not us. When we pray to God and God get, the brother talked about that in his prayer, you know, thank you for the prayers that you have answered. When we go to God and ask for something in prayer and He answers it, that is not our power. That's God. God does that, not us. It's all God's power. You know, in knowing that we are helped, we ought not to worry about our faith as much as we ought to be inspired to trust God. And guess what that is? That's faith. So you see, it kind of feeds on itself if you let it. Because the more you let go and know that it's not you, it's not your might, it's not your power, it's not your faith. It's whether or not God is inclined to answer your prayer. That's where the power comes from. It's not us. Listen to what He said to other places. Matthew 21, 21, 22. Jesus answered and said to them, "Verily I say unto you, if you have faith and doubt not, you shall not only do that which is done to this fig tree, but also if you shall say to this mountain, Be thou removed and be thou cast into the sea, it shall be done. And all things whatsoever you shall ask in prayer, believing, you shall receive." In Mark 11, verse 23, He says, "Verily I say unto you, that whosoever shall say to this mountain, Be thou removed and be thou cast into the sea, and shall not doubt it in his heart, but shall believe that those things which he saith shall come to pass, he shall have whatsoever he saith. Therefore I say unto you, what things soever ye desire when ye pray, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them." See, it wasn't a mistake. Matthew didn't make a mistake. Mark, that was what Jesus said. All of them said that. If you will believe, if you have faith, you can say to a mountain, "Be thou removed, be thou cast into the sea." But my friends, it's not us. It's the power of God that moves that mountain. But He said, you can have it. Whatsoever you shall ask in prayer, believing. Remember when the prophet Elijah prayed that it might not rain, and it rained not for the space of 3.5 years. Remember that? He said he was a man subject to like passions as we are. He prayed earnestly that it might not rain, and it didn't. And you remember when he wanted it to rain again? You remember what he did? He prayed, "Lord, let it rain." And he sent his servant, "Go look out the window. What do you see?" "I don't see nothing." We prayed some more. Told his servant, go look out the window. "What do you see?" "I don't see much." And finally, what did he say? He said, "I see a cloud like a man's hand, a little cloud." He saw a thunderstorm coming up, is what he saw. And Elijah took off. You know, I don't think Elijah was wondering as much about whether or not it was going to rain as he was the fact that he needed to leave and get ahead of the rain. I don't think he was concerned about whether or not it was going to rain. He just wanted to know when. Sandy's servant, is it going to rain yet? It wasn't a matter of is it going to rain, it's when is it going to rain? Is it here yet? That'd probably be a better way to translate. Probably ask him, is it here yet? That's faith. That's faith. We need that kind of faith. Lord, increase our faith. That's what he told them. He told them, hey, if you had the faith of a grain of mustard seed. And then he went on. And this confused me forever. This next part of this answer. In fact, I didn't even know if it was the same part of the same answer. But I want you to listen to what he said. He said, but which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle, will say to him by and by when he is coming from the field, go and sit down to meat? Will ye not rather say to him, make ready wherewith I may sup, and gird thyself and serve me till I have eaten and drunken, and afterward thou shalt eat and drink? Doth he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I trow not. So likewise ye, when ye shall have done all those things which are commanded you, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. Now, that I have heard read as a standalone verse to tell us how pitiful we are. And we are. I'm not going to deny that. I'm not going to argue that. But why did the Lord say that? It was an answer to increase our faith. That was part of his answer. Which of you, having a servant, by and by, when you both worked all day, will go home and say, sit down, I'll feed you, buddy. You done a good job today. No. No. You tell him to gird himself, wash things up, fix you some supper, and when he gets done fixing your supper, he can have something to eat. Because he is a slave. He is a servant. Now, we couldn't treat people like that today because we don't have slaves. But I'm sure that that's pretty typical for a slave-master situation. You wouldn't tell a slave to sit down and you'll feed him. He said, so likewise ye, when you have done all that has been commanded you, say we are unprofitable servants. We have done only that which was our duty to do. Now that's a downer. No, it's not. And here's why. I want you to stop and think about this now. When I read that scripture and I say, if I had the faith as a grain of mustard seed, I could say to a mountain, be thou removed and be thou cast into the sea, and it shall be done. And I sit and I think to myself, boy, if I could just get my life in order. If I could just get myself right. If I could just quit this sin or that sin. If I didn't fall back all the time. If I could just be a better Christian. When I get to be a good Christian, then I can have the faith to say to that mountain, be thou removed. Won't it be a wonderful day when I can be a good enough Christian to have that kind of faith, to say that and ask God for something and He give it to me? Well, you could end the story there, or you could listen to the rest of Jesus' answer. When you have done all that has been commanded you, say, I am an unprofitable servant. I have done only that which was my duty to do. Now, what does that tell us? That tells me that God's grace is not dependent upon us. Praise God. Praise God, it's not. Okay? He's saying, even if you do everything that is commanded you, you are no more than an unprofitable slave. So if the power to answer a prayer comes from God and not from within us, then doesn't it follow that it's God's will, not ours? Doesn't it follow that our life, while we must attempt to do the best that we can do, while we have to, out of respect for God and out of respect for His love for us, out of respect for the sacrifice that Jesus made, we have to clean up our act, to transform our lives, to put aside sin, put aside the weight that easily besets us, do all these things. But when we have done these things, we're still unprofitable. So what that does to me is that frees up God to answer our prayers even when our life is a mess. If our life is a complete mess and we are attempting to serve God, and we make that move towards God, then God is free to bless us just as much then as He is when we have done everything that we have been commanded to do. Because even when we've done everything we've commanded to do, we still aren't worth anything. It's still the power of God. I used to get kind of depressed when I'd read those few verses at the end of that statement. But now I think I hope, I'm beginning to understand why He said it. And why He said it the way He said it. And that it really was an answer to that question, Lord, increase our faith. He said, I'll give you an increase to your faith. When you've done everything I've commanded you to do, you're worthless. But it's not to hang your head. It's to lift your eyes to God. And to lift your look and your gaze towards heaven. And know that the grace that saves us comes from God, not anything that we do. That the power that comes in prayer comes from God, not from within us. And when we have learned those things, then we will begin to be understanding the power of God. Because what have we done? What could we do? Romans 11:35 said, who hath first given to Him, and it shall be recompensed unto him again. Who has given first to God? What have you given God that He did not first give you? Yeah, I don't know if you understand it. Those of us who have been fathers understand that Christmas time loses a lot of its luster when you have children. Not because, actually it gets better because I like to watch the kids playing and doing stuff. But the idea of getting something kind of loses its fire. Because anything that the kids give you, it's something that you've already given them first, or they wouldn't have to give, because they're just kids. They're not working. They didn't. You know, I give Fred $5, and he goes out and spends $1.50 and gives it to me for a birthday present. You know, that's wonderful. But it's really of mine to start with. And you know, it's the same way with God. God gives us gifts. Anything we give back to God, He just gave us. Who can give to God first? It can't be done. It can't be done. So when we learn that we're not giving God any great gift, it means that God is just as free and open to bless us before we get our life together as He is after. Now, does that give us license? No, I don't mean that. You know I don't mean that. I don't mean live how you want to live and expect God to bless you. That's not what I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is when we're trying and we're doing the best we can do, even if it ain't real good, if it's the best we can do, then we're making progress. We're making progress. That's all God really has asked of us. It's a great incentive to trust Him. To trust Him. So two things Jesus tells them will increase our faith. Number one, to understand that it is God and not us. It's not the quantity of our faith, rather the fact that God hears us and answers our prayer. So then our relationship then is to just believe. It doesn't take a huge amount. I don't even know if you can quantify faith. What He's saying is you believe. And grace is decided on how God wants to treat us before we've ever done anything. So that kind of just turns the equation around, doesn't it? Lord, increase our faith. He said, believe. Lord, increase my faith. I want to move mountains. You can't move a mountain anyway. Just believe. Lord, I want to curse a fig tree and have it die. Well, you can if you'll just believe. Increase my faith. It's not you. It's God. It has to be in the will of God. It has to be something that we are doing for God's will, something that grace wants to give us. You know, we're just here for a little time. I get discouraged sometimes thinking of how little time we actually have here on this earth when you stop and think about it. I get discouraged sometimes thinking how much time we have and how little I've done with it. You know, so I get a little bit of it both ways sometimes. I'm thinking, am I still here? What have I done this year? And but you stop and think about it. Fred and I was, we went down to the land between the lakes is in northern Kentucky. It's some ground that the Tennessee Valley Authority stole from a bunch of poor farmers back in the 40s and 50s. They like to tell you how sweet it is, but it amounts to that. There was flooding going on down there, and the federal government come in and said, you're going to sell me your farm, and this is how much you're going to get for it. And there you go. And then they come back a few years later and went to the other side of the hill and said, this is how much we're going to give you for your farm. It's gone. And later on, they said, oh, this would be a nice place for a park. And so they told everybody in the middle to get out. And this one little town was fighting them, and suddenly, for no apparent reason, in the middle of the night, the whole town burned. Not quite sure how that happened, but then the federal government said, well, since it's burnt, we'll just take it. But anyway, it's a park now. And the thing about this park is that it has a lot of cemeteries in it. And it was early in the morning, and everything was closed. There wasn't nothing open. And so we didn't have long, and they was with us, and we was just roaming around. We'd say, oh, let's go look at this cemetery. And we'd get out, and it was rainy, and it was icky, and me and him was only two getting out of the truck, and we'd run over and look at the tombstones. It humbles me when I start looking at an old graveyard. Because we got to look at this one tombstone. It was a mother and father. I don't remember, 14 kids, was it 11 or 7 or some too many kind of kids. And the youngest one was born, I think, the year mom and dad died, or right at the year after. And we told him he didn't even get to know his mom and dad. The youngest one didn't. And then his tombstone was over there. And he lived a really long time. He lived up in the 80s, 90s. Had a real good life, you know. But he was there too. He was buried. And off in the edge of the woods, there was a half a dozen stones. And I thought, man, they look peculiar. Just those rocks laying over there. And I was over there looking at them. And I told Fred, I believe that this had to have been a building at one time. And he's like, yeah, there's this plaque here, Dad, that tells all about it. So I backed up. That is this Baptist church that had been there, and they took it down. Of course, the only thing left was the threshold of the door and two post doors. So it'd be like if this church was completely gone, the only thing left was just the threshold and a couple of cornerstones. And the threshold stone was worn, where people had walked over for years and years and years and years and years. And then one day the government came in and said, well, you got to move. And so it probably just fell into disrepair and fell over. Or somebody burned it or whatever. But I was thinking about all the people that had crossed that threshold over the years. All the people went over that threshold and got married. All the people went over that threshold and got baptized, want to be baptized. All people that come out of there pumped up after a gospel meeting. All the people that come out of there crying at a funeral. And I thought to myself, you know, that church didn't even last. Building didn't even last that long. And I thought about our lives. The only thing in our life that matters is how we please God. The only thing in our life that is going to be of any permanency at all is whether or not we pleased God. And that's it. You know, those of you who was here last night, we talked about limestone. Hey, it looks really, really permanent, but it's really, really not. After a little while in the rain, you can't read numbers you've scribed in it. After a while in the acid rain, it begins to just disappear. Our life has but one purpose, and that is to please God. To please God. It doesn't matter how happy we are. It doesn't matter how satisfied we are with our life. It doesn't matter how big our bank account gets or what size car we drive or whatever. It don't matter. The only thing that's going to follow us is whether or not we have pleased God. And so I encourage you tonight, what I wish to impart to you tonight. You say, Lord, increase my faith. Lord, open my eyes that I can see. You've got the faith. You've got the eyes to see. What you need now is to learn the will of God and to execute the will of God. And having done those two things, you will be on the path to pleasing God. And that really, there's no secret to it. There's no magical mumbo jumbo. There's no prayer to say. There's nothing that you can do except walk after God. Read His Word, study His Word, and try to please Him. That's all we do. If you're here tonight and you need the help of the church to get your life where you need help, you know, where you need somebody to pray for you. I've been there. I've needed people to pray for me. I didn't feel like God wanted to listen to me. If you feel that way tonight, come forward. There's somebody here. Somebody here can pray for you. If you need the help of the church to be baptized, you never named His name, never started that walk, come forward and make that known. Walk together and stand.